Don't bother me. I'm having phone sex.
Why sit at home and watch Jerry Springer when I can see this stuff live?
Welcome to GeekCast Radio, episode 10. I am your host, TFG on Mike. Steve Megatron is not with us this episode. I don't really think he's interested in this topic that I'm going to be talking about, but joining me is Derek Ferguson from Better in the Dark. Hello, sir.
Hello. How you doing, Mike? Hello, folks.
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Oh, I can't complain. Here in Brooklyn, New York, beautiful downtown Brooklyn, New York, we finally got rid of the snow and all that other crap, and the sun is coming out, it's shining, you know, the men are cheering, the women are swooning, and the little children are waving multicolored flags, so it's all good.
Now, for some strange reason, I'm flashing to the Unity Day Festival in Spider-Man 1.
Okay. Okay.
So what's been going on with you, sir?
Oh, nothing much. I've just been basking in the glow of success because, as you may or may not know, I had a novel come out. You know, my fifth one came out on in February, the same month I was born in.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's interested, they can go to Amazon.com. or BarnesandNoble.com and order a copy of Dylan and the Legend of the Golden Bell.
Cool.
Or they can go to www.pulpwork.com and they can order it there, as well as a whole bunch of other goodness, such as How the West Was Weird, which is an anthology of weird Western stories concerning supernatural stuff like Aztec vampires and zombies and all other good stuff. So if they're interested in that, by all means, go check it out.
Oh, so Jonah Hex won't be making an appearance?
No, not in this one. We didn't want to get sued. No, we couldn't get, you know, we can't stand being sued.
Yeah, that's true.
Not at this stage of the game. You can't stand being sued at any time, really.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, what's can you reveal any upcoming episodes of Better in the Dark, like topics or what you guys are going to be talking about upcoming?
Well, you know that we just did an episode about Derek Flint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the two Flint movies, Our Man Flint and In Like Flint.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we did that whole James Bond series where
right.
we reviewed every Bond movie. So now we're winding down. We've just got the two Daniel Craig movies left to do. But we thought, since both me and Tom were such big fans of the character played by James Coburn so memorably, we just, like, kind of jumped ahead. And we did that. We have more episodes of Director's Court coming up, which seems to be a very popular subject among, you know, our listeners are better in the dark. You know, they seem to like that. So we're planning a John Carpenter episode. So if anybody's a fan of John Carpenter, they don't want to miss that coming up. We have, who else do we come up? Well, we're kicking around like a lot of names. There's a lot of different names that's coming up.
Yeah, I gave you an idea yesterday. I don't know if you guys are going to run with it or not, but I gave you an idea last night of taking the premise of Director's Court and focusing it on actors.
Yeah. I haven't talked to Tom yet. I'll probably talk to him tonight because we're going to be recording Friday, so we got to like firm up exactly what it is that we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
I'll, you know, I will definitely mention that episode to him tonight. But we weren't talking about, you know, like you said, we talked last night, and I did say that, you know, we had kicked around the idea of doing something similar, you know, with actors such as like Ben Affleck and a few other actors who seem to have strayed and don't know exactly where they're going with their career. And, you know, maybe we can give them some advice on how to get it back on track.
Yeah, how does Ben Affleck, an Oscar-winning writer, or Emmy-winning writer, or whatever the hell he and Matt Damon got for Good Will Hunting, go from that to starring in Geely?
Yeah, they got they won the Academy Award for Best Screenplay.
Yeah,
for that one, yeah. And I mean, Matt Damon's career has seemed to like eclipse his buddies tremendously. I mean,
Matt Damon is pretty much the new American super spy. I mean, he outside of the Bourne stuff, he just was in a film, God, what is it called? Green something.
Oh, Green,
Green Zone.
Zone. Yeah, that just came out. The Iraq, yeah, that's the Iraq war movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like Matt Damon is now our new, you know, superhero. You know, I mean, you know, when it comes to action movies.
Yeah. All right, so the topic today will actually be Nash Bridges. And I have to say, I told you this last night, and I think I've told you before, you are probably the only other person that I know on the face of the earth that actually likes the show as much as I do, because everyone else that I've talked to, they don't like the show at all.
Really?
Yeah.
You know what? I have no idea why. I mean, I know a few people myself that watch Nash Bridges. And, you know, they love the show. My wife loved it. I mean, I turned her on to it, you know. And she's not a big Don Johnson fan. She hated Miami Vice. She didn't like. She's never seen a movie Don Johnson was in that she liked. But she liked Nash Bridges. And most people I know, yeah, they like, you know, they started watching it for various reasons. I think one of the main reasons why a lot of people started watching it was because they had never seen Cheech Marin in a cop show before. And I think people said, well, what the hell is he doing in there, you know?
Yeah, but they've been buddies for years. I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think the first time they met, well, now they've been buddies for years, but I think the first time they met was on the set of Tin Cup.
Right.
The Kevin Costner Cheech Marin golf film back in, I want to say, 95?
I think it might have been even earlier than that, to be honest. But I know what you're talking about. Yeah, but a lot of people don't know that they've been, you know, buddies for a lot of years. And they had always wanted to do something, you know, they always wanted to work together.
Yeah, you know, I had read in, I either read or heard Don Johnson say it himself that, the Nash Bridges character in the Nash Bridges show, it's not meant to pay disrespect to Sonny Crockett and Miami Vice, but I've heard Don Johnson say in interviews is Nash is a more mellower, cooler version of Sonny, whereas Sonny was kind of like hard nose in your face. Nash can be that way, but he would much rather go the long way around and tricking the bad guy into catching themselves. Versus where, now I haven't seen a lot of Miami Vice recently, but if I'm remembering correctly, Sonny Crockett was pretty much an in-your-face type of cop.
Yeah, Sonny Crockett definitely had, and I've read also where Don Johnson says, well, you know, Nash Bridges is Sonny Crockett, but, you know, like 10 years older. And I don't buy that at all, because Sonny Crockett was a much different character from Nash Bridges. He had a darker edge to him. He had a more pessimistic view of life. He was like a more in your face. He was more blunt. He wasn't much of a thinker or a planner, to be honest. You know, he was like pretty straightforward ahead with his, the only thing he has in common with Nash Bridges is that they both have a serious weakness for women. they fall in love way too fast, you know. They meet a woman and like, bam, you know, in 5 minutes, you know, they're in love.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's a common flaw that both of them have that gets to both of them into a lot of trouble on occasion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember one of the reasons why I even started getting into this show was the fact it was part of CBS's Friday Night Action Night or whatever CBS was terming the action night thing back in 96, 97. It was Walker, Texas Ranger, Martial Law, and Nash Bridges. Those were the three action series that CBS had at the time.
Right.
And I remember I like the later seasons of Walker Texas Ranger, like towards the end of the series, where you have Cage and Sydney, the other two Rangers that came in, Judson Mills and Nia Peebles. I like when they came in, but I'm not really a fan of the earlier season. And Martial Law was just awesome.
I never was a fan of Walker, Texas Ranger, period. But then again, I've been looking at Chuck Norris since the early, you know, 80s. I mean, I remember going to the movie theater and seeing, you know, the movie he was in with Bruce Lee, Return of the Dragon,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it was called. I remember going to the movie and see that. I will admit, though, that one thing I admire about Chuck Norris is that he realized that, okay, as far as movies went, that gravy train was pulling into the station and it was time to get off because nobody was going to see his movies. And he's one of the few movie stars, I think, that was able to successfully make the transition from being a movie star to a TV star. Because Walker, Texas Ranger ran for what, like 12 years or something?
Nine years,
okay. But that was still, I mean, for TV, that's still an impressive run.
Yep.
And I don't think it's been out of rerun since it went off the air.
No, I actually, a couple of weeks ago, I saw a syndicated episode on USA. So, yeah, no, it's still around on TV.
Yeah.
I believe they just released, or they're about to release, the final season on the final season that needed to be released, which was the eighth season, because they released that show all kinds of weird. They released it on DVD. They released the final season the last year, I think, first. And then they released first through six, and then seven and eight, and whatever else. So I don't know, but yeah, that was one of the reasons why it was, you know, it was part of that Friday Night Action Night thing, and that was one of the reasons why I kind of caught on to Nash Bridges, and I liked the show. I liked the premise of the show. You know, you got this 40-something cop based in San Francisco. You know, his professional life is more together than his personal life.
Well, that's a staple of, I mean, you know, that goes all the way back to cop shows ever since the 50s that you have the cops. But yeah, but they put a nice little fresh spin on it in Nash Bridges in that he did, you know what it was that I liked about the whole character of Nash Bridges? You didn't find him too often having these little angsty moods about his life, because cops whose personal lives are messed up, you know, you get these brooding scenes where they're sitting in a bar and they're complaining about how screwed up their life is. You really never got that from Nash Bridges. He was a guy that was at a time in his life where he was comfortable with who and what he was.
See, it's one of those things where I can watch an episode where, say, something horribly goes wrong for Nash, whether it's dealing with one or the other of his ex-wives, or whether it's dealing with his daughter Cassidy, or whether it's dealing with stuff on the job. At the end of the episode, he goes into some restaurant, gets a glass of wine, and just sits there silent. You know, he's one of those silent brooders where he doesn't really go off on tangents. He doesn't go all emo.
Yeah.
He decides to keep it in, and then, of course, right before the episode ends credits, you just kind of see him smile, and it's like, oh, yeah, everything's going to turn out okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which in life, you know, life, people, you know, and I have friends of mine, and if they listen to this, I'm sorry, but you know who you are. You know, spend way too much time blowing things up out of proportion. And I always got that impression that Nash had things in proportion. He dealt with things in proportion to their importance. You know, okay, this situation will take care of himself. I think the only thing that he really, really got his guts in a knot about was the whole situation with his father, Nick.
Right, yeah.
Because you could tell there was a real love there. And, I mean, you know, that maybe they had their problems, you know, in the past when Nash was younger, but they've resolved them and they've moved on. They're at a different level in their relationship now.
Right. I mean, you know, I've seen episodes where, you know, he gets emotional when he needs to be.
Exactly.
As far as, like the sad, sappy, you know, like, remembrance type of emotion. As far as him going the other route, like anger or wanting to get stuff done and just, you know, get it done and get out of my face, he has that a lot.
Yeah. Now, Sonny Crockett got sappy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Sonny Crockett, he either got sappy or he got mad.
Right.
He had two ways of dealing with an emotional situation. He either got sappy or he got mad. Nash has got more different shades to him, which, of course, reflects the fact that Don Johnson himself is older now, and he's got more acting experience, and he's got more life experience. So he's got more to work with in his toolbox now as an actor, whereas mm-hmm. when he did Miami Vice, he wasn't all that, you know, seasoned. He had did, like, a couple of, you know, things. You know, I remember most memorably he did a science fiction movie called A Boy and His Dog, based on Harlan Ellison's short story. And mm-hmm. if you've never seen it, and if the good folks listening to this have never seen it, well, then hire yourself over to Netflix and rent this movie right away, because it's one, to me, it's one of the classics of the science fiction genre. And mm-hmm. he was in that one. But, you know, in Miami Vice, he didn't have a lot of experience as an actor. So, therefore, I guess he had to, you know, he had to work with what he had. But now, as Nash Bridges, which is what, like 20-something years later,
yeah,
you know, he was a more seasoned actor, so, and he was more comfortable. And you can see that in his, I mean, Don Johnson was more laid back playing Nash Bridges than just about anything else I've seen him do.
Yeah. Last night I was getting the intros and all that stuff for the beginning of this show. The bumper before obviously this discussion happens, and I was watching the premiere of the pilot episode Genesis, and you know the thing of the story was they're going after these guys who hijack these chips. Well, you know it's Nash Bridges came at the day and age where we're all about like a prologue,
yeah,
and then the intro credits to the actual show, and then it starts the actual show, whereas it used to be like you would get, this is the show, this is the introduction, these are the actors, and now here's the show. Well, it's, you know, it came at the beginning of that, you know, let's give you a little bit to tease you, give you the credits, and then blah, 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 blah. Well, at the end of the first, prologue of the episode of the pilot, the bad guy jumps off some roof, and Nash just goes, I don't think so. Next time, we'll see you next time, and we'll get you again. Uh-huh. And he just finds this roundabout way of catching bad guys, and sometimes he'll have the bad guys catch themselves, where he has this like I got you moment.
Oh, there was a great episode that came later on in I think it was like the fifth or sixth season, where he runs up against this female criminal mastermind who's using this nerve gas to pull off this robbery.
Oh, yeah.
And Nash, you know, he's got no gun, anything like that. And he says, listen, can I come over there and just talk to you? And, you know, we can work this out. And she says, well, you can talk all you want, but, you know, we're getting out of here. And if you don't give me what I want, you know, I will, release the nerve gas and kill you and everybody within the square city block. And Nash just says, well, just let me come over there and talk to you and, you know, negotiate. And as soon as he gets closer, he's got a knife, excuse me, that he's had hidden in his hand, and he cuts open her suit. And he tells her, okay, now go ahead and release the nerve gas now. And I always liked that. You know, it was a very... Nash isn't one of these cops that, you know, the bad guy points a gun at him and says, okay, well, drop your gun. And he drops his gun. He's always going to figure a way out of whatever, you know, hole that the bad guy has got him in.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I'm actually trying to figure out what the name of that episode was. I'm actually looking through. I think it was... I think you're right, it was season 6. I'm just trying to find it. I'm not really sure. I know it's... Yeah, it's in one of the... I think it's actually in one of the earlier seasons. I don't think it's in season 6.
Okay.
But One of the things about like just going through this this episode guide I got off of Wiki, like some of the more comedy aspects of this show, like episodes like Got Bananas or Get Bananas or whatever it was with the with the monkey. Yeah.
Or the one where RuPaul gets and who was it? It was Evan and somebody else. They had to go undercover.
It was Evan and Rick Pitina.
Oh yeah! Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. And they had to dress up as women in that one, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, oh man, forget about it. Or the one there was one with Penny Marshall. She played a cop.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
She was a New York City. She was a New York City cop. That had come
I think that was Skin Deep. I believe that's what it was.
Okay.
Yeah, Skin Deep. It was in season 3. But okay. Yeah, I mean, just some really great episodes. And then, you know, some of the it's actually surprising to me because I've watched this show so long, even though it's currently the only 3 of the 6 seasons are on DVD. I'm hoping the other 3 come on DVD so I can complete the collection, but just watching them on TV in syndication, like every time I see Daniel Roebuck somewhere else, because he was the one that played Bettina, the first thing I think of is that character of Bettina. He was in Agent Cody Banks, and I was like, wait, what the hell is Rick Pitina doing in Agent Cody Banks?
Oh, okay, I've never seen that one. Yeah, but if I see him like guest starring or something else, that's the first thing I think of Rick Pitina, because he played that character so well, and he was such a counterpoint to, you know, Nash and Joe. And that was one of the things that I loved about Nash Bridges, is that every once in a while they threw these really crazy off-the-wall characters at Nash, and you could see Nash was really at a loss sometimes. How did I get stuck with these crazy people, and how do I deal with them? Stone Cold Steve Austin as Bounty Hunter Cage. Oh,
yeah,
my
Jake
God.
Cage.
Anytime he showed up, you knew it was going to be a lot of fun.
And, you know, people can say what they want about wrestlers in films. Like, I know a lot of people don't like John Cena in The Marine and in 12 Rounds. Me, personally, I like those movies because I'm a fan of John Cena.
Oh, 12 Rounds kicked ass.
Well, thank you for agreeing. But I'm just saying, a lot of people don't like those films in general. A lot of people generally don't like, you know, wrestlers in films or whatever. But, you know, seeing Stone Cold in this, it was actually a shock to me. I'm like, wait, what? And then there's an episode, I believe it's called High Society in Season 6, where he and Yasmin Bleeth have to catch this character, this criminal who he is only he has seen, only Cage has seen for a split second and knows what he looks like. He has to go through that etiquette training with the, you know, this fork on this side and that spoon on that. And it's just funny to put him in a situation like that, because you normally wouldn't think Stone Cold Steve Austin being in a situation like that.
But you know what the funniest thing about that whole thing was that there was actually an attraction between the Yasmin Bleeth character. What was her name in the show? I don't know.
Caitlin Cross.
Caitlin. There was a Caitlin, to her own surprise, found that she was genuinely attracted to Cage.
Yep.
And vice versa. And I said, oh my God, if they put these two together, I said, you know something, they should just have an episode with these two together, you know, just sort of, because it was your classic Beauty and the Beast, you know, type of situation.
Yeah, yeah. And then there was, I believe it was that same episode where, Cage did something to her, or vice versa, or whatever else, and he was, like, giving her a free shot. And he was actually, you know, he's, like, holding his arms out, like, pushing his stomach up towards her. He's like, all right, you know, honey, take your best shot. She turns around and slugs him right in the mouth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he goes, I meant my stomach.
Yeah, I didn't mean for you to hit me in the, you know.
Yeah.
That was really, I like, you know, like I said, anytime he, and there was even some talk for a while about spinning that character off into his own show.
I think he works well in this show. I don't know if Stone Cold could, as Jake Cage, could hold his own, because you have to have something there to, you have to have like a Nash character or something there to balance him out.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? TV is always too fast, especially now. I think they're too fast. A character becomes, you know, popular, like a supporting character, and the first thing they want to do, oh, spin him off into his own show. You don't have to spin off everybody into their own show. And know something, some supporting characters work best as that, as supporting characters. You see them once in a while, you don't see them all the time. Mm. You know, they don't need their own show, like, classic example, Bunce. Remember Beverly Hills Bunce?
Yeah.
The spinoff from, what was that? Hill Street Blues.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That, you know, with Dennis France, that lasted only about, like, one season.
Right.
Yeah, because you know why? Because Bunce is a supporting character. He's not a star.
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
Just talking about some of the other castmates here, you know, you said earlier, you know, a lot of people tuned into this to see Cheech Marin. I mean, not a lot of people have seen Cheech in a, you know, in a show where he's not smoking something.
Right, right. Well, actually, I'm still, you know, I'm surprised that most people, well, of course, you know, I grew up, I was in that generation. I actually owned a couple of their comedy albums, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went to the movies and I saw, you know, all of their Up in Smoke, you know, Cheech and Chong's next movie. You know, I saw, you know, all of those movies. So, you know, I'm kind of surprised that people, you know, like, okay, I'm kind of surprised that younger people know him from that period in time, you know, that remember that kind of stuff he did, because that was like 30 years ago, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that all goes back to, you know, say us now, say my girlfriend and I have a kid.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm going to bring my kid up on everything that I grew up with. Knight Rider, Airwolf, A-Team, Nash Bridges, The Shield, stuff like that. So it all goes back to heritage and what you grew, you know, what your parents showed you or allowed you to watch when you were a kid. And that's probably how younger people now know of who they are.
Well, that's very true, because I know that that's how come I got into loving Westerns so much, because both my mother and father are big Western fans, and anytime a Western came on, they would say, oh, sit down, you gotta watch this, you gotta watch this. But, yeah, but I mean, speaking, we were just talking about, you know, the comedy episodes a little while ago, there was that memorable episode that reunited Cheech Marin and his partner, Tommy Chong.
Yeah, Tommy Chong.
And they have that great scene where, you know, they're talking about, you know, drugs and stuff like that. And Tommy Chong says to Cheech, what's your drug of choice nowadays? And Cheech says, Viagra or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, talking about some of the, I know we haven't really finished talking about the actual cast, but some of the guest stars in the show, oh my God. The list of guest stars, you got people like you said, RuPaul, Lucy Liu was in the very first episode.
Right.
Philip Michael Thomas. Actually, it's funny that there was two episodes with him. One was where they combined both teams, the Cheech and Chong team and the Don Johnson, Philip Michael Thomas team. And at the end of that episode, Chong and Philip Michael Thomas went off to the Bahamas to gamble at the end of the episode. And Nash turns to Joe, or Joe turns to Nash or something, and says, you think they'll be all right together? Yeah, they'll be all right.
Yeah, I know. It was really kind of, yeah, that was a genuinely funny episode.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you never expected to see these two teams back together again. And during that episode, they actually did split them up. Like, Cheech and Chong, they went off to investigate something together, and Philip Michael Thomas and Don Johnson, they went off to investigate something, you know, together. So they had a chance to have these nice little end scenes. There was even one part of the show where it's Don Johnson and Philip Michael Thomas, and you could hear the Miami Vice theme playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What happens is it's when because there was two episodes that Philip Michael Thomas was in. I forget which one it was, but Ronnie, the big officer that is kind of like the security guard for the SIU.
One of my favorite characters.
Oh, I love Ronnie. Ronnie's so cool.
It was like Ronnie could do anything.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Ronnie, I don't know how this happened. I don't know if he was undercover or what, But Ronnie was a guard for the first villain in the very first episode of the show, before he was even part of the SIU. So I don't know if he was undercover there, or if they brought him in. I'm not really sure. You know how sometimes police bust people and they'll make deals with them or whatever. I don't know how that works, but but the Philip Michael Thomas thing, where you're talking about the Miami Vice theme, Ronnie had said, "Hey Nash, there's somebody here to see you." And Nash is like, "Well, who is it?" "I don't know. He's out front. Says he's an old friend." Nash walks out. You don't even hear them say anything. You just see Philip Michael Thomas's face, and that's right then is where you hear the Miami Vice theme.
Yeah, I remember that.
But, you know, some of these guest stars, like, Willie Nelson, Shannon Tweed, Penny Marshall, like we said, Serena Scott Thomas played his one of his ex-wives, Jan Michael Vincent from Airwolf played his long-lost brother.
He played his long-lost brother.
Ron Jeremy was in this show as a guest star. So is Jenna Jameson. I don't remember those episodes. I'm going to have to go back and look for those.
Paulie Shore, but...
Paulie Shore, David Faustino.
I don't remember anything Paulie Shore was in, so...
You try not to.
Cassandra Peterson, more well-known as Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. She was in one episode, yeah.
Yeah, there was a ton of guest stars for this
show. What's his name? The guy, he was in Miami Vice. What's his name? The singer, Glenn Frey?
Glenn Frey, yeah.
Glenn Frey. Wasn't he in an episode of Nash Bridges, too?
Yep.
Okay.
He's on the list here somewhere. Yeah, there he is. Yeah, but just I mean, this is one of those shows where, because Don Johnson and Cheech Marin and a lot of the other actors are so famous, they can bring on their famous friends. What's his name? Paul Gleason was in an episode before he passed away.
Oh, okay.
He was in the... I forget what the title of the episode was, but it was the one with... he played Mickey Tripp, kind of like a San Francisco's version of Howard Stern, basically.
Uh-huh.
He played one of those shock jocks, and they had to protect him from being assassinated or something. Just overall great, great cast list as far as the guest stars. Actually, one of my favorite characters is, as far as the regular cast, is Harvey Leak. I always liked Harvey. He was so cool.
Harvey was next to Ronnie. He was also like Nash's go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever he needed, you know, he went to Harvey, and Harvey, you know, found a way to do it. And, you know, he was, you're right, he was just cool with that whole thing that he was a deadhead from way back, and, you know, he was another guy, like I was saying, like, earlier, like how Nash was a guy that was comfortable with what he was and with his place in life. Harvey was like that, too. You get the feeling that he was probably one of these real out-of-control stoners when he was younger and stuff like that, but one day he just... like, grew up and said, well, you know what? I either got to do this or I'm going to turn into this. And he didn't like what he was turning into, so he became a cop.
Yeah. Speaking of Harvey, I'm just reading in his little bio here. He's very passionate about his 72 Ford Ranchero. The Ranchero is seen in the series almost as often as Nash's Barracuda until the car was irreparably damaged in a shootout.
Oh, yeah, I remember that episode.
Oh, that poor car.
Yeah.
there's a lot of scenes where
Harvey,
something...
And Harvey almost had a heart attack. You know, he was like... I mean, the poor man was just, like, devastated.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we can't talk about Nash Bridges and not talk about the CUDA, because that's one of the most classic muscle cars ever. There were only 14 of those made. And it was... just so awesome to see a show with such an awesome car in the 90s.
Yeah.
The last show with an awesome car that I saw outside of this was Knight Rider. but, yeah, anytime something would happen to the CUDA...
Boo.
What?
Knight Rider?
Yeah, Knight Rider.
I should tell you right now, I am not a Knight Rider fan. I never got the appeal of that show.
It's a guy in his talking car. How can you not get the appeal? Outside of nowadays where we have GPS and everything else, didn't you want a talking car back in the 80s?
No, why in the world would I want to talk to my car?
I don't know.
My car is to get me from where I want to go. If I want to have a conversation, I'll put a... I'll put a smoking hot babe in the seat next to me. I don't want to talk to my car. I want it to go take me where I'm going. I don't know. Guys always look at me when I say I didn't like Knight Rider, because I say, you know something, that's Saturday morning cartoons to a guy, you know, that's in a talking car. Please forget. Airwolf. Now, that was a show.
Yeah, it was.
The helicopter didn't talk. The helicopter fired rockets.
Yeah.
Kick ass. That's it. See, Knight Rider, I could have went, you know what? I could have took anything except the car talking. I'm sorry. Nah.
But the thing about the CUDA was, you know, Nash was so protective of it. His brother had given it to him before he went to Vietnam. And any time that anything happens to the CUDA, Nash's reaction is just so awesome. Because it's like, there was one episode where the bad guys are up in a helicopter and they're firing a machine gun, and the machine gun hits the side of the CUDA or whatever. It's like, that bastard shot my car.
Oh yeah. Well, if you mess with his car, he didn't even let Joe drive it. And Joe is like the closest thing to a brother that he had, you know, outside of his real brother, which he hasn't seen since he was a kid. But yeah. Joe, you know, is like his brother. He wouldn't even let Joe drive the CUDA.
You know? Well, there was actually one episode where Joe actually stole it. I think it was the episode 25 Hours of Christmas. Okay. Where they're working through the Christmas Eve, Christmas Day holiday, Joe steals the keys, takes it to his dealership buddy and says, hey, I want you to put new tires or new, you know, something like, you know, of the year or whatever it was of the year of the CUDA, and just kind of, you know, spritz it up for Nash. It ends up getting stolen, and Joe has to try to get it back and everything else.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
I don't remember that episode, but now that you mentioned that, now you put an obsession into, because I will not be happy until I see this episode now.
Yeah, I think it was. Let me look at the DVD here. I think it was 25 Hours of Christmas. I believe that's what it was. Let me actually look on the episode list here. Who are some of your other favorite characters from this show?
Okay. Well, first of all, I mean, of course, Joe Dominguez, you know, played by Cheech Marin. The show really didn't really start taking a humorous turn until he became a regular on it, because originally he was just like a supporting character because he was retired.
Well, he was supposed to get, funnily enough, on the DVD, on the commentary or the writer's table that they have on the DVD, he was supposed to die the first episode, because the first episode shows him getting shot at the end, and it closes with Nash being in the hospital with him. Uh-huh. He was supposed to just be a one-off character for that first episode, and then they said, oh, well, why don't we just, you know, say he got shot in the arm and, you know, let him fly and see how it lasts.
Yeah, well, okay, well, what had happened is that they had seen the chemistry between him and Don Johnson, and it was like a similar thing with the West Wing. Because in the West Wing, you know, you were never supposed to see the president.
Right, only, yeah.
Oh, okay, the show was just supposed to be about his staff. In fact, Rob Lowe was supposed to be the star of the West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And you were only supposed to see the president like every four or five episodes. What had happened was that the chemistry that Martin Sheen had was so powerful was that they said, okay, well, we're going to make the president the star. You know, they changed it. The same thing happened in Nash Bridges, was that the chemistry and somebody, the producers, the directors, the writers, were smart enough to say, you know something, let's go with this. So then, yeah, so he was a supporting character, I think, like, in the first season, and then, like, Nash tricked him into coming back when Nash became the boss of that special unit they had. What's it called?
Special Investigations Unit.
Right, SIU. Because he wasn't the boss for the first season.
No, for the first nine episodes, oh, God, what's his name? I can never pronounce his name correctly, but it's Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
Hayatagawa or something.
Yeah, I don't want to disrespect the man by, you know.
Well, I can pronounce his, like, Kari and Tagawa, but I can't pronounce the hyphenated part of his name.
Okay, so we'll just go with that for this episode.
Yeah, he played Lieutenant AJ Shiramura, and part of his character arc was if he didn't get promoted to captain, he would leave and go back to Hawaii and, you know, leave the door open for Nash to lead the unit and, you know, obviously go up in rank.
You know what I liked about his character?
What?
He actually reminded me a lot of Sonny Crockett's boss from Miami Vice, played by, what's his name, James Olmos?
Yeah.
Yeah, remember him?
Yeah.
You know, from my, well, you, I know you say you haven't seen too many episodes of Miami Vice, but yeah.
I know who you're talking about, though.
Yeah, but Cary Tagawa's, you know, his lieutenant reminded me a lot of, you know, that character. You know.
Yeah, but Shiramura was more, AJ was more of a, you know, let things kind of, not really fly by, but he wasn't as strict as, say, Almos's character was, I would say. Because
yeah,
Nash would do stuff like the first episode, he requisitioned, like, I don't know, $500,000 or something. He tried to requisition some money or whatever for this bust, and obviously couldn't. And then AJ was like, "Ah, you can't do that without going to approval through me." But they kind of just brushed it off. It wasn't more of like where it would get more interesting was as soon as they put in the internal affairs department and pretty much all these different cops that are a higher level at the time are just out to get Nash because, you know, they're the corrupt ones and he's the one, even though his methods are a little bit off the cuff, I would say, at least he gets the job done and he gets the job done right, whereas all these other cops want to do it, you know, the bad cop way.
Well, that's the main thing. I mean, in police work, as with a lot of other jobs in life, oftentimes what matters is results. And Nash is able to get away with a lot of stuff because, yeah, he gets results, though.
Mm-hmm.
So they, but I'm glad you touched on one thing because there were a number of episodes where Nash and Joe were, like, under investigation by internal affairs because they were suspected of being crooks or taking bribes or being crooked or whatever. And I just like to say this, that I don't blame internal affairs for a couple of reasons. One, Nash and Joe have got to be the best-dressed cops in America. These are cops that are walking around in $1,000 suits. And handmade Italian shoes, and I mean, you know, where are they getting the money to dress like this every day?
Well, you know, granted, you know, you can argue for show's sake for that, but as far as the production on that, they wanted, I believe Don Johnson wanted, you know, colorful characters, because San Francisco, on a general day, is very gray.
Uh-huh.
You know, It may not be raining, but it may just be like one of those gray, cloudy days. So the city is very gray. So they wanted like these high popping colors with the wardrobe. It's just what I heard on the DVD. That episode, 25 Hours of Christmas, the SIU trapped at the office on Christmas Eve as they finish wrapping up a murder investigation and prostitution's case. Joe freaks when Nash's Cuda is stolen while he is getting it detailed. That was the 12th episode of the second season, aired originally December 13th, 1996. Okay. So it's on the season 2 DVD.
Okay. But yeah, but I mean, you know, Nash, he drives this vintage muscle car. He lives in this fabulously, you know,
I want that apartment.
Yeah, law. I mean, you know, so yeah, if I was internal affairs, I would be wondering, you know, well, how do you afford to live like this on your salary, even a captain's salary? Because I believe that's what he was, right?
Well, he went up to captain. He was originally just an inspector. And uh-huh. And then AJ left, and then he took the captain's test because apparently there were no open lieutenant spots or something or other. I don't know. It's some technical thing. You know, we were mentioning the internal affairs stuff. There's an episode, I believe, I think it was the episode that Yasmin Bleeth premiered in. I believe it was called. I don't know, it was one of those things where, actually I think it's Frisco Blues, I think it's in season 5 or season 6, mm-hmm. Let's see here.
Yeah, but just on the basis of their wardrobe alone,
mm-hmm.
I would be investigating them, especially Joe, because Joe was a smart dresser.
Yeah.
He dressed his ass off, you know.
Yeah, I remember in the first episode, the first season, they said, you know, they make a joke at Joe's jacket because it's like a maroon color. And he goes, I don't know, Nash said something, and Joe goes, oh, it's part of my Merlot collection.
yeah. Oh, man. Just terrific, great suits. And speaking of Joe, you know, which we were already, you know, I always regretted that they never did a flashback episode. I wanted them so badly to do a flashback episode because I just wanted somebody to ask him one day, just how in the hell did you and Inga meet and marry? You know, they never explain how they got together, but that must have been one hell of a courtship. Because he's a Mexican and she's Swedish. Yeah, Swedish.
Yeah.
You know, how did they meet and how did Joe court her? You know, that would have been a fascinating story that they never. She was one of my favorite characters in the show as well.
Yeah, you know, they changed her. It wasn't always Carolyn Lagerfeld. It was somebody else in the first couple of episodes. I don't remember the actress's name off the top of my head, but they eventually put in Carolyn Lagerfeld. And, you know, it's funny. It's funny when you watch a show that's this long, like 6 years in the running.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ends, unfortunately, and you see the person somewhere else. She showed up, I hate to even admit that I watch this show, but I like it, whatever. She showed up as a grandmother in one of the Gossip Girl episodes, and it's just like, wow, wait, that's Inger. What the hell is she doing on that show?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, going back to go ahead.
No, I think I saw her. She was on one of the Law and Order episodes. She played the wife of an eccentric artist, and he got killed or something like that. I saw her. And yeah, I was the same way. I saw, oh my God, that's Inga. And you know, so when she didn't speak with the Swedish accent, that's what threw me off for a while. Because I said, well, I know this actress, but I can't place the voice because she didn't speak with the Swedish accent.
Yeah. You know, going back to the Skin Deep episode where Penny Marshall guest starred. It's funny about that because we're talking about, you know, you're talking about how did Joe and Inger meet and how did he court her and all that stuff. You know, this whole episode, Skin Deep, Joe and Penny Marshall's character are at each other's throats until Nash forces them to team up and they start getting along, and turns out he married a Swedish woman, she married a Swedish guy, Penny Marshall's character did, and, you know, they're talking about all these same similar places in Sweden. It was just funny. I always like when Nash and Harvey team up, because it's always one of those cool, you know, Grant, you know, Joe's his best friend, Joe's his main partner, but whenever Joe isn't around, I like it better when the two of them team up versus when Nash is put with, like, Evan. I don't know, Evan's an alright character, but he took a really dark turn within the series.
Well, Evan is actually the only character in the show that we actually see go through a whole entire character arc from start to finish, whereas, you know, Evan is the only character that has, like, a story within the story, let's say, because we see him go from being, you know, a young, ambitious cop, and we're told several times that, yeah, that he's on the team because he reminds Nash of himself when he was that age, and we see him become a seasoned cop, and then we see his fall, his romance with Nash's daughter, which doesn't end well, and his fall from grace, and he's kicked out, and he becomes alcoholic, and he becomes born again, and he comes back, and it's really a fascinating arc when you look at the whole thing, you know, really.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And you see how it affects people like Harvey, who, you know, who got to be very close to him, you know, to Evan. And you can see how much it hurt him, especially when Evan became alcoholic. You can see how much it hurt him, you know. Yeah. Nash was kind of like, you could see it hurt him as well, but he was like a little bit more stoic about it. And like, oh, well, he's got to pull himself out of it by himself.
Right. But, you know, Nash would obviously get a little bit more emotional once the season 5 finale Jackpot Part 1 and 2 would hit, because in Jackpot Part 2 is where Evan gets killed.
Yeah.
And I just remember Harvey sitting in the hospital room on the phone. He calls Nash, and of course Nash is in the Teddy Malone character trying to, you know, schmooze with these bad guys to try to get them, you know, going in their own way. and he has to kind of play it off.
And he can't react at all to hearing
he reacts a little bit. I mean, you can see it in Nash's facial features where he kind of like grins and grimaces, and then he just kind of starts to play it off where he's like laughing. He's like, oh no, man, you didn't say that, did he? And I thought it was an excellent way for him to play off the emotion, but...
Oh yeah,
and of course he got emotional later about it, but it was just one of those great episodes. It just goes to show you how many good episodes this show has. I don't know if we ever, and I would probably tap you to do this probably a couple years down the line. If the other four or other three seasons ever come out, I am doing a review show on this TV show, because I don't think there is a single bad episode in the entire 6 years. I honestly, every episode, there's maybe a couple of things I would cringe at, but there isn't like one bad. I could watch any episode of this show and you know, just be happy and whatever. I don't know. Maybe I'm taking my fandom a little bit too literally, but it was just so awesome.
No, actually, yeah, and... I distinctly remember, because, you know, this is before we had DVRs, of course, and mm-hmm. thank God for DVRs. The best thing invented for TV since color.
Yeah.
You know, but when Nash Bridges was on, you know, that's when we just had the VCRs.
Right.
And I usually had mine set to tape something else, because, of course, you can only tape, you know, one other thing at a time. And Nash Bridges was one of the few shows I would actually make time to sit and watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, for me, that was like a must-see on Friday night. If I was on Friday night, I had to watch Nash Bridges.
Yep.
You know, I wasn't happy unless I watched it. So, yeah, that's one of the few shows that I did make time to watch. Mm-hmm. Because it was a lot of fun to watch. It was.
Especially when Tracy Walter came in as Angel. That was one hell of a character.
Who was a great character.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny. I never knew this before until we just, over on MWire, Movie Week in Review, we just, we're now into our like 30s for episodes, but we just finished the Batman franchise, and I had no idea. At the time, like when Batman 89 first came out, I didn't know who Tracy Walter was. Hell, Nash Bridges wasn't even on at the time. You know, I was 9 years old, but... As soon as I saw Tracy Walter in this, I didn't recognize him. He's Bob the Goon.
He's Bob the Goon, yeah.
What was the other... one of the other characters that crosses over from another one of my shows that I like, which is kind of weird, when the sixth season start and Cress Williams shows up as Inspector Antoine Babcock, I was like, wait... That's Baron Sunday from Lois and Clark.
Oh, you know something? You're right. I didn't even make that connection. But it's been so long since I've seen, you know, Nash Bridges.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But I didn't really care for his character as much. Well, of course, soon after he came on, I mean, the series was canceled, so we never really got a chance to, like, we never really got to know his character. At least I felt I didn't get to know his character as well as I got to know, like, you know, Harvey and Evan and, mm-hmm. You know, Rick Pitina and, you know, Nash's wife. The first one that we saw,
Lisa,
was played by Annette O'Toole.
Annette O'Toole.
Yeah.
Who was Lana Lang in Superman 3 and Mrs. Kent in Smallville.
Smallville, yeah. But I felt I knew the other characters better, like Caitlin and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Kelly Who character before she got killed.
Yeah, that was one of the dark parts of Nash's journey, because he claimed it self-defense, but he pretty much killed that guy for revenge the guy killed Michelle. Yeah. We can't not talk about this show and talk about some of the other side characters, especially Buzz Bishop.
Boz was a great character too.
Yeah, Boz and Tony B and Pepe.
Yeah, Pepe was the gay guy.
Yeah,
who was always convinced that Joe and Nash were a homosexual couple, no matter how much they tried to deny it, or, you know, he saw Nash, you know, romancing these women, there was one episode where Joe said, "Pepe, you do know I'm married, right?"
Well, the thing about that episode was, you know, it was Pepe, Nash was off in the background. They were in the SIU, And Inger was standing right there, and Joe's like, Pepe, you do know my wife, Inger.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Pepe was like, you know, he looked at Inger and said, you're so brave and you're so supportive. You not convinced Pepe that Nash and, you know, that they weren't a couple. Matter of fact, there was even an episode where they were in, you know, where Nash, you know, and Joe, I don't know, something happened, and Joe hugged him and something like that, and Nash said, would you get off of me? People talk about us enough as it is.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So maybe this is a common rumor that, you know, there's something going on with Nash and Joe. I don't know.
Yeah. Just so, you know, I can't say this enough. This show is just so, so awesome. As I mentioned before, there are the first three seasons are on DVD. The first two seasons do have special features. The third one, however, has no special features. I don't know why it doesn't. I'm not sure if it just wasn't in the budget or what the deal was, but the first season's special features, they have the Writers' Roundtable for Season 1. They have on-set interview with Don Johnson and Cheech Marin, audio commentaries, Don Johnson and the original Gonzo idea, and the Season 1 promo, and then the second season has audio commentaries with Don Johnson, Cheech Marin, and creator Carlton Cuse, and it has a couple of featurettes.
As a matter of fact, now that I recall it, there was one episode where Nash and Joe were interviewed by Geraldo Rivera.
Yep.
He was on, and Geraldo Rivera asked them, you know, well, excuse me, he said, well, there's a lot of people that, you know, say that there's more to your relationship than just friendship. You know, how do you respond to that, you know?
Yeah, that was a live shot in Season 3.
That was pretty much a flashback episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty much a flashback episode, but the problem with that episode was, and it just goes to show you, even though Evan had an excellent character arc, one of the reasons why I could not stand Evan, he wanted to get in the pants of one of the producers of the Geraldo show, so he kept giving them all this ammo. That's one thing you don't do when you're in, you know, public service work. You don't talk to the press.
Oh, absolutely not. Nah, yeah. Yeah, you don't. You don't. Matter of fact, when I worked for the Board of Education years and years ago, and I almost got fired from my job because I spoke to the press, and I didn't know that you weren't. But because, you know, I was a young, dumb kid. I was in my 20s, mm-hmm. and somebody shoved a microphone in my face and asked me my opinion about something that had happened, you know, with the Board of Education. You know, and I, you know, and I got called down to the big office. You know, I got called down to Livingston Street. I said, oh, my God. I went down there, and they said, well, weren't you aware of the fact that you're not supposed to talk to the press? And, you know, I said, I didn't know. And they put me on suspension for a couple of days while they made up their mind. Fortunately, they didn't fire me. I got reprimanded, of course, and everything like that. But I guess they figured, well, since he lost, you know, like a week's pay being suspended, that's enough punishment. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not supposed to talk to the press. Of course not. No.
Yeah, no. I guess we should also, unfortunately, bring up the cancellation of the show, which I was so, so disappointed. The sixth season of Nash Bridges would be its last. However, the show was obtaining fair ratings from Nielsen following its Friday night ratings battle, which it was losing to NBC's Law & Order Special Victims Unit, which, wow, yikes.
Yeah, but the ratings were still good.
Yeah, they were still good, but they weren't, like, they weren't enough, apparently.
But my understanding is, and you obviously know more about this than me, so you could probably set me straight on this. My understanding and what I've heard is that one day Don Johnson just walked in and said, no, something, I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, CBS was hoping to get a seventh season out of Nash Bridges, but failed because Paramount wasn't willing to pay. Apparently, by the time the show reached its six seasons, production costs for the show were about $2 million per episode.
Woo! Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Another factor that led to the ending of the series was that, as you said, Don Johnson wanted out. Johnson was getting tired, and CBS and Paramount had enough episodes to put the series through syndication. According to Don Johnson's publicist from Wiki here, Don was already exploring other opportunities. Doing a TV series 5 days a week for as long as he did is an exhausting task. Don was ready to move on. Which is very sad. I wish I just don't like how they ended it. The final episode, basically you have an ending where, let me see here. Fair game. The serial killer who picked, oh yeah. This is where James Remar guest starred. The serial killer who picks up passengers in a cab, then murders them, stalks the city. Cassidy struggles with whether she wants to continue being a cop or not. And how the series ends is Cassidy, Nick, and Nash are all at the airport seeing her off because she's going to go to Paris to visit her mother, because that's where Annette O'Toole's character went, I think, after the second or third season. And it just ends with Nick and Nash seeing her off and saying, hey, do you want to go to the sports bar or whatever? I mean, it just wasn't really... There wasn't really that much of an ending at all for it.
Well, that's what they should have did with the Cassidy character after Evan got killed. Because to my... Okay, as far as I'm concerned, that whole last season where they made her a cop and put her on, you know, her father's, you know, task force, which wouldn't have happened in real life. I mean, that was, first of all, Cassidy had never shown any inclination of being a cop. I don't even think, okay, let me say this right off the bat. Cassidy is my least favorite character in the show. She's spoiled. She's selfish. She doesn't know what she wants. She's, you know, she's like the wind. She blows with whatever goes. You know, she's a problem child. She never showed any inclination at all to be a cop. And all of a sudden, she pops up, and all of a sudden, you know, she's dedicated to the police force. She wants to be a cop. And apparently, in the space of 6 months or so, she has passed the training, the tests. She's bypassed being a uniformed police officer, and she's a detective. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, Nash Bridges, okay, we are talking about a TV show here that, you know, so we're not expected to take it realistically, but that was really being elastic with the, you know, with the reality of even that world.
Right, right. I like Cassidy's character on the show, just of the way her character arc played out. I really don't like Jodie Lynn O'Keefe, the girl that plays her, that much in other roles, because she's been tapped to basically play these snooty, snobbish, you know, upstanding, I'm better than you type of roles.
Okay. No, so that's the impression that I got, which is why I would, okay, as far as I'm concerned, her romance with Evan was never convincing to me, because, yeah, Cassidy had that attitude of, you know, she felt she was better than a lot of other people.
Yeah.
I just didn't care for her character too much at all. And I felt that a lot of times, you know, she was an impediment and they just put her in a scene because they needed some kind of family conflict. Because Nash got along with his father.
For the most part.
Yeah, so they wanted to have like that little character type of, especially after his wife left, or his ex-wife, Annette O'Toole. You know, when she left. So, Nash didn't have any family members to have a conflict with. So, that fell to his daughter. You know, they said, okay, well, Nash has got to have some kind of conflict with her. You know.
Yeah, but there was always a few schemes with eventually it would become Joe and Nick, but Nick would always get kicked out of nursing homes or would always, there was one episode where he came up with this scheme. The University of San Francisco or something, some sort of university in the show. I don't know if it was actually the University of San Francisco, whatever, but he was going in there for sex trials, basically.
What he didn't
know, though, was that they were filming.
Yeah.
They were filming the patients, and the tape ends up at the SIU on Nash's desk, and Nash's sister Stacy comes by, and she's like, "Oh, where's Dad and Nash? Oh, they're out back having a cup of coffee." And she sees the envelope. She doesn't know it's a tape, but she sees the envelope, grabs it. It's the tape. And as the episode ends, the last thing you hear is her screaming and them running towards her.
Yeah, I remember that one. Tape.
Oh wow, you know, it just goes to show you how much fun. I mean, granted, you know, a television show 5 days a week is a lot of work, but it just goes to show you 6 years and a whole hell of a lot of fun that these people had.
Yeah.
I don't think this show would have lasted two seasons if Don Johnson or Cheech Marin or any of the main cast didn't want to do it.
Yeah, because it's obvious when you're watching the show, it's obvious that everybody's having fun doing this show. Yeah. Everybody liked doing this show. You know, and Nash Bridges was one of those shows you never heard about any conflicts on the set. You never heard about anybody bitching about they weren't getting paid enough you know, or anything like that. You never heard any of that coming from the Nash Bridges set. You know, you just get the feeling that these people were really honestly enjoying what they were doing. Yeah. You know, they like doing this show. And why not? It was, you know something, Nash Bridges wasn't meant to revitalize the cop TV show genre or to win Emmy Awards, anything like that. It was just meant to be a solid hour of entertainment. And that's what you got every week. You got a solid hour of entertainment. A little bit of action, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of family drama, you know, the relationships between the, and you always wanted to see what crazy scheme Joe was going to come up with next when, like, later on, he roped Nash into, just like Nash tricked him into coming back to work, he basically tricked Nash into becoming a partner in his detective agency.
Yeah, the off-duty gigs.
Right, right. And then, again, we started talking about one of your favorite characters, Boz, who started out as this, you know, wannabe, you know, hip-hop b-boy type of thing. You know, he was a white guy that thought he was black, and he dressed black and talked black. And then we found out later on that he actually comes from a wealthy English family.
Yeah.
You know, he lives in a mansion with a butler and everything like that. The butler said, "Good evening, Master Bosworth." You know, and Joe and Nash were flabbergasted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, yeah, I remember that episode. He's like,
oh, that was hilarious. When they came to his house and they said, "Man, you live here?" I mean, he lives in something. He lives in a mansion slightly smaller than the White House.
Yeah.
You know, and he's rich.
Yeah.
But every time they saw him previously, he was always talking that hip-hop, yo, boy, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, the funny thing about that episode is that their gardener had gotten killed.
Yeah.
And it was a frame-up on Boz that Boz was going to take the rap. I don't remember off the top of my head who was the one that actually did it, but we find out at the end of that episode his birth and his parentage comes out, and apparently he was the son of the maid of the house who slept with a black guy somewhere, so his whole hip-hop persona, whatever, was actually true.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of like a roundabout way of saying, oh yeah, there's a whole purpose of him doing all this stuff, and then we see this episode, like, oh really?
And then, of course...
Yeah. Of course, he's so happy at the end. He's like, oh my God, I knew it.
He was actually happy to find out that he said, I told you I was black. I knew I was black. I just knew it. And also, that episode had a great scene at the end where Nash got to do the classic detective mystery thing. You know, like how they used to do it in detectives where they got all of the suspects in one room?
Scooby-Doo and the type detective, thing, yeah.
Right, and the detective eliminates them one by one and points out the only... And, you know, and he puts his hand right on the murderer. So Nash had a chance to do that, which he, you know, never got to do even though he was supposed to be this brilliant detective.
Uh-huh.
So he finally got to... I'll tell you, Nash Bridges had so many great scenes like that and great moments. You know, I'm surprised when you say that a lot of people don't like this show. I don't see how they could not like this show.
I don't understand that, but it's, you know, it's like I told you last night when we were talking on Skype. You know, just a lot of people that I talk to offline and off the internet, even the ones that I talk to on the internet, either don't know about this show or don't really care for it, whether they don't care for Don Johnson, whether they don't care for the show itself. It's just, I don't know a lot of people that I can actually sit down with and have... Hell, we've been talking for an hour now, you know, about this subject. You know, but it's just one of those shows that kind of gets a bum rap from people who just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, they're more like, oh, well, I'd rather watch Miami Vice. And I'm not saying Miami Vice was a bad show at all. It was, if not the defining cop show of the 80s, one of them anyway. You know, but Nash Bridges was one of the... Honestly, I would put just my own personal opinion, in the last 15 years, my two favorite and best cop shows of the last 15 years are Nash Bridges and The Shield from FX.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good choices. And I'll tell you, if I had the choice... And see, I don't buy like a lot of TV shows on DVD because of a couple of reasons. One is because most of the shows that I like watching, they're still in reruns. But right. Stuff that are not in reruns anymore, like The A-Team, you know, I got that on DVD. shows like Deep Space Nine, I have that on DVD because I'm a big Star Trek fan. But if I have my choice between getting Miami Vice on DVD and Nash Bridges on DVD, I get Nash Bridges. Because there really isn't that many Miami Vice episodes that I really want to watch again. Really, there's not. But, yeah. You know, but there's a lot of Nash Bridges episodes that, yeah, I could watch over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
There are.
I'm actually probably going to do, because like I said, you know, I've said a couple times in this episode that all through the first three seasons are on DVD. I'm probably actually going to do a marathon all afternoon after we record this and watch the first three seasons again, because just talking about it once, you know, it makes me want to watch it again. So, do we have anything else we want to say about this show?
This is your show. You tell me.
I don't know. Do you have any other characters you like or you don't like out of it?
Let me see.
We've pretty much
I think we pretty much covered everybody. I liked, we never finished talking about Angel. Angel, I liked the fact that we never really found out if the character actually was just a crazy guy who thought he was an angel or if he actually was Nash's guardian angel, as he kept saying that he was, because every time he showed up, that's what he would tell Nash, well, I'm your guardian angel. And Nash just thought he was a crazy, like, homeless guy. But there were some instances in some episodes where Angel had knowledge of something that he shouldn't have had.
Yeah.
Or he would tell Nash something, and Nash would say, well, how could he know that? You know, so, yeah, so he was a good, again, he was a good supporting character, and I think that that is the underlying thing. Okay, with any TV show, at all, whether it's live action or animated, there is only one thing that keeps you coming back every week, the characters. If you don't have good characters, people don't want to watch the show. It's just that simple. And Nash Bridges had good characters, and it had good, solid relationships between the characters. And, you know, so that's what brought me back every week to see it, at least, because I like these people, and I wanted to see what they were up to every week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, one of the characters that I do want to bring up was this con woman and Nash's former lover, Tamara Van Zandt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, did I want to marry her when I saw her? That is one beautiful woman, Donna W. Scott. Wow.
Didn't she show up, like, in two or three episodes? Didn't she show up a couple of times? Okay.
Yeah, her last episode was in season 6. She is stabbed and thrown overboard by a mobster in the episode Something Borrowed.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I don't remember. That one I didn't... Well, I might have seen it, but I might have forgotten, because it's been a while since I don't have the benefit of you. You've seen, you know, like you said, you watch a lot of these episodes before, you know, we did this, you know.
Well, actually, you know, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm going to after we finish recording this. I'm just going to go ahead and do a DVD marathon of all three seasons that I have.
But you know something, but I'll tell you one thing. Memory is such a funny thing, because as we're talking about it, I'm remembering more and more about the different episodes that I have seen. You know, like, you know, my subconscious is like kicking in and it's hollering down, bring out the Nash Bridges memories, you know.
You know, it's funny, the first season was actually, this show actually started as a summer show. You know how, you know, networks or whatever in the summertime will, you know, find shows to replace the off-season shows. This, I don't think, even was originally going to be a full-time network show. The first season only has 8 episodes.
And I think that for the benefits of your younger listeners who might not know about this concept, because, of course, you know, seasons aren't like they used to be when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But, folks, here's what used to happen way back in the day before we had 500 channels. What happened was that there were some shows that were meant to only be summer shows. They were replacements for the shows in there, and they were basically supposed to be placeholders for the regular show while, you know, the cast and crew took a break off and whatever. So you would have a show that would come on and run just for the summer, and that was it. And sometimes, if the show proved popular enough, yes, it did get picked up as a regular show, which was the case, as you're saying, with Nash Bridges.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to take a break. I'm probably going to go through these DVDs and put in some of my favorite quotes. So we will be back after this.
It's alive! Nash.
Yeah.
Someone here to see you.
Who's that?
He's outside in the front deck. Says he's an old friend of yours.
Joe. Bubba, you are way too far from home. Hey, man.
Nash, man.
Long time no see.
Yeah.
You don't look any worse for the wear and tear. Look
you
at
you. You don't see everything.
Yeah, ditto. Say hello to my partner, Joe Dominguez. This is Cedric Hawks.
We are back, and, you know, wow. Hopefully you'll go back and listen to this episode, Derek. I don't know if you will or not. I'll give you the link once we post it, but some of the quotes that I put in that little bumper. One of my favorite Harvey quotes was from the first episode where Nash comes by him and says, yeah, this radio receiver doesn't work for nothing, and he pulls his Grateful Dead armband. Harvey's, like, on the phone. He puts the phone down to his neck. He's like, don't bother me. I'm having phone sex. And it's like, it's just like, wow. Or when Nash spouts off some random address or whatever, Evan's like, he's talking to Joe. How does he remember all that? Joe's like, he's got a pornographic memory.
Yeah, when he actually means photographic memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing that we didn't mention about, you know, the Nash Bridges character, that he supposedly, you know, he has like this genius IQ and he has a photographic memory,
yep.
You know, that he doesn't forget anything, you know.
Yep.
Both skills which come in handy while he's, because, you know, Nash is able to make these connections between things that other people don't see.
Yep.
And I think in one episode, Joe explains, well, you know, he's a genius, you know, and somebody said, yeah, right. And Joe said, no, really, he is, you know, and I believe he even named his IQ, you know, that's, you know, and
yeah.
he said, oh, he's a guy that could have been anything he wanted to be. He didn't have to be a cop.
Yeah. All right. So I asked you earlier about more Better in the Dark. Where can we get more from Better in the Dark?
Well, all you have to do is go over to earth2.net. And, you know, you can find Better in the Dark over there. We have our most recent episode, like I said, is the one we did where we looked at the two Flint movies, In Like Flint and Our Man Flint. We had a review episode that we did not too long ago that's up there where we reviewed Legion, Sherlock Holmes, Moon, and Avatar. And you know, it's already classic already where we talked about the Absolute Justice episode of Smallville. Where, you know, we're still getting email on that one.
You know, I like some of the... the main thing I like about that episode was the Dr. Fate effects and the way his helmet looked.
You know something? You know, as much as people rag on that show, you know, well, first of all, I didn't take it because at the end of the day, what are we talking about here? We're talking about a TV show.
Yeah.
But you had people that were positively foaming at the mouth about this show. I thought that the actor who played Dr. Fate could have been a little bit taller. But you know what I thought was really cool? They had that effect in his mask where his eyes were red.
Yeah.
And you could tell it wasn't a CGI effect. I bet they actually put real little red lights in there. You know, I think they did because I don't think that was a CGI effect.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, anything they did with Dr. Fate, I liked it in that one. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I never knew this before, but I was looking through. I'm planning on actually eventually, sometime in the next couple of months, getting that complete series set of Stargate SG-1, that big box set that they have out.
Okay.
I had no idea Michael Shanks played Daniel on that show. I didn't have any clue who he was.
Yeah.
Until I looked him up on IMDb, and I'm like, wait, that's Daniel from SG-1. What the hell?
Yeah. He's been doing a lot. Matter of fact, he was on, do you watch Burn Notice?
No.
Oh, he was on Burn Notice for a season. Yeah. What, you don't like Burn Notice?
No, it's not a show I got into.
Oh, okay.
As much as I like Bruce Campbell, that's just not a show I can get behind.
Okay.
Don't you guys also have an actual Better in the Dark site? Isn't it betterinthedarksite.net or .com or something or other?
No, we actually have a fan page. Well, it's a fan page. One of our fans was good enough to actually do that. And if I can find the address real quick here, we'll give the address to the folks so they can go there. It's sites.google.com/site /betterinthedark.com/centralsite/. So if that makes any sense to anybody, Tom reads this stuff off better than I do. But if worse comes to worse, they can always just Google, you know,
yeah.
Better in the Dark, and it'll pop up. But that Better in the Dark Central, that has our brand new Better in the Dark glossary, whereas the definition is given for a lot of the phrases that we use on Better in the Dark. DC at the Movies, where it's a link that will take you directly to all the reviews that we did of most of the DC movies, like the Superman movies, you know. What else do we have there? We have, of course, the Derek Ferguson Library. So if you want to go ahead and you want to go there and purchase some of my books, please, by all means, do so. A link to Tom's DJ Comics Cavalcade, where he reviews comic books. He did a whole thing on Green Lantern, you know, Hal Jordan, the Silver Age run, you know, because he's a big Silver Age fan. So he did a whole series on the Silver Age Hal Jordan and Marvel's Tales of Suspense series from back in the 60s.
Right.
As always, I have a live journal. It's called Derek Ferguson's Notebook, and you can go there and, you know, I'm always spouting off about stuff on there. And I'm also on Facebook, so if you want to contact me, you can contact me on Facebook. Better in the Dark also has a Facebook page as well. So I'm not hard to find. I'm all over the place.
Aren't we all? I'm surprised. I know you probably don't want to do this, but I'm surprised you guys haven't joined Twitter yet. But anyway.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I just don't get Twitter. I don't. It's one of the matter of fact, I don't even get Facebook, really, a lot of the times. But, however, if you're a creative person and if you do anything like writing or if you're an artist or, you know, even if you do podcasting, I mean, whatever creative endeavor you're into, you know, something, you have to embrace the technology of the times and make it work for you. So,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, because actually I'm not really much of I much rather communicate like I'm doing like right now with you, talking to you, than to just dash off like two or three sentences about what I'm doing. And then just throw it out there, which a lot of people, you know, and I'm not saying that I don't, you know, like Twitter as a concept. If it works for you, by all means, please use it. You know, it's a form of communication. And if that's how you're comfortable communicating, do so. It's just, it's not, you know, my thing.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you for joining us here on GeekCast Radio. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. The first, you can stop by geekcastradio.com and check out all the other podcasts there. Second is you can join our forums at predaconempire.com/nexus. And the third is you can leave the show feedback in iTunes. Please do this. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say which show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. We have Twitter, unlike Mr. Ferguson. The name there is GeekCast Radio. Mine is TFG and Mike. We hope you enjoyed this episode of GeekCast Radio. Wish you'll join us next time. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
Derek Ferguson.
Until next time.
How does he remember all that?
I just got a pornographic memory.
Oh, hell, I'm waiting for the Marines.